Why would you say are we so attached as women to be good? It scares the hell out of me that someone could think about me that I'm a bad person. This is
it's my deepest fear. I fear that more than I fear death. Again and again and again and again in my life, I get to that point. The feeling that I always have is there's no way out. This is the person I can't get away from. This is my sibling. You can't get away. You're trapped. This is my mother. You're trapped. You can't get away from this. This is my husband. I can't get away from this. I hate the way this relationship is going. I hate the way I feel. I hate the dishonesty that I'm living in. I hate saying yes when I mean no. I don't want to do this. But I also don't want to tell the truth because I'm so afraid that you're going to look at me and think that I'm bad. And all she has to do to get free is take off the blindfold, take off the handcuffs, and walk away. And what the walking away always looks like for me is I have to use my voice and I have to say the truth. That's the fire. And I fucking don't want to. I will always prioritize my own mental health and well-being above anything and anybody else in this world. So that's my priority, because if I don't take care of me, nobody will take care of me. I've never felt more free than I am now, but I also know that I'm just getting started.
Hallo, so schön, dass du da bist, hier beim Podcast Happy, Holy and Confident, dein Podcast fürs Herz und den Verstand. Mein Name ist Laura Marlina Seiler und ich freue mich so, dass du da bist, denn heute in dieser Podcast-Folge gibt es wieder ein ganz besonderes Schmankerl. Und zwar die wundervolle Liz Gilbert ist zum zweiten Mal zu Besuch hier im Podcast. Und Liz Gilbert, unter anderem die Autorin von Eat, Pray, Love und eine so wundervolle Frau. Ich feiere sie wirklich so sehr. Einer meiner persönlichen Vorbilder in meinem Leben, die so sehr in ihrer Integrität ist und einfach ihre Wahrheit lebt, was für sie wahr ist und einen ganz anderen Weg geht als die meisten von uns. Und allein dafür ziehe ich schon meinen imaginären Hut vor ihr, weil sie einfach den Mut hat, die Dinge anders zu machen als die meisten anderen Menschen und ihren eigenen Weg geht und ihre ganz eigene individuelle Healing Journey hat und einfach eine unfassbar tolle Autorin ist. Und ich freue mich so sehr, dass sie heute wieder zu Gast ist im Podcast. Wir haben über so wundervolle Themen gesprochen. Ich weiß, ich sage es gerade sehr oft wundervoll, aber ich bin einfach sehr dankbar, mit ihr wieder gesprochen zu haben und ihren Input zu bekommen und ja, mit ihr über Spiritualität zu sprechen. Wir sprechen darüber, warum wir so oft, vor allen Dingen auch als Frauen, dieses tiefe Bedürfnis danach haben, gut sein zu wollen. Und es uns so eine Angst macht, dass jemand über uns denken könnte, dass wir ein schlechter Mensch sind oder irgendwie böse sind. Wir sprechen darüber, wie ihre ganz persönliche Beziehung zu Gott aussieht, wie sie ihren eigenen Gott gefunden hat, wie sie ihre eigene Spiritualität lebt, wie sie, was für sie Disziplin bedeutet, warum das für sie so wichtig ist, wo sie gerade steht in ihrem eigenen Leben. Wir sprechen über Co-Abhängigkeit und wie sie damit umgeht, da rauszukommen. Und ja, wir sind einfach so querbeet, glaube ich, über alle möglichen Themen drüber gelaufen, drüber spaziert. Und ich hoffe, dass wir dich mitnehmen können auf diesem wundervollen gemeinsamen Spaziergang, dass du dich aufladen kannst, dass du Inspiration bekommst und dass es dich vielleicht, hoffentlich, ein bisschen mehr noch dazu inspiriert, einfach deine eigene Wahrheit zu leben. Denn am Ende ist es die Wahrheit, die uns befreit und die uns dabei hilft, unseren ganz eigenen individuellen Weg zu leben, wie auch immer dieser aussehen mag. Also viel Freude und Spaß mit diesem Interview. Und am 18. April, am 18. April ist Liz live in Berlin und wird über Kreativität sprechen. Also falls du möchtest, hol dir ein Ticket. Ich packe sie auf jeden Fall in die Shownotes. Ich werde auf jeden Fall da sein. Ich freue mich schon mega drauf und vielleicht fühlt es sich für dich ja auch stimmig an. Also 18. April in Berlin, Liz Gilbert live und jetzt geht's los mit dem Interview. First of all, really thank you for taking the time. I felt like my heart, I don't know what it is with you. I mean, I told you the last time before, I feel this really strange heart connection with you. Like whenever I think of you, I just feel so calm and my heart is just like, I love you. I don't know what it is. I really can't tell you, but it's just how I feel. So I was like, yes, we get another hour to talk.
I love you too.
So this is just really, I admire you so much for who you are and how you move through the world. And there were two things you said in our last conversation. And the one thing you said is that we should say more often, this is not working for me. Do you remember that? Mm-hmm. And there was also something that my community, they responded so strongly to that, because I think as women, we are so conditioned to not allow ourselves to say, wait a minute, this is just not working for me. Like, we always feel like we have to make it work for everyone except for ourselves. And today when I've been thinking about your work, I was like, and this is maybe the first question we can go to, that I have the feeling that if there would be, in German we have the saying, ein roter Faden, like a red thing that connects everything, like the red, I don't know what the English word is for it, but like something that goes through everything you do. Feels for me that is the empowering of women on a soul level, like that you speak to the soul of woman, kind of in this truth and depth and allowing us to feel ourselves and to connect to our truth. So is this something that you feel as well in your work, that there is like this underlying wish to help women to kind of awake? I'm not sure if this is the right word for it, but this is how I feel when I think about your work.
I'm so happy that's how you feel when you think about my work. I don't think you're wrong. I think, when I see another woman enslaved and compressed and controlled by old ideas about what we are here to do with our lives, I feel like I'm a dog watching another dog get beaten. I feel it in my body. When I watch women do what infinite numbers of generations of women in my family did, which was just serve, but not with a warm heart, not with an open heart, not with a soft heart, not with gratitude, but to serve with pain and resentment and martyrdom and exhaustion and disappointment, and to surrender themselves over to family systems and cultural laws that see them as nothing but tools to uplift, serve, protect others. And when I see women trapped in that, serving families who don't serve them, serving relationships who don't serve them, serving culture that doesn't serve them, giving and giving and giving until they are empty, it makes my heart hurt. It makes my heart hurt so much. And I think that, you know, I will always end up speaking on a spiritual level, and I know I can with you, but I, you know, I've been promised freedom. Like, God has promised me freedom in this lifetime, but I have to go get it. You know, I have to go get it, and I have to, and what I've been told is, you know, by my guides, by my spirit, what I've been told is like, freedom is here for you. You can have it. But you have to put everything else on the fire and walk away. Everything else has to go on the fire. Everything that you were taught, everything that was modeled to you as what makes a person good, that has to go on the fire. All your existing ideas about what God is, what spirituality is, has to go on the fire. Family loyalty has to go on the fire. Cultural obedience has to go on the fire. Actually, it's really funny because lately I've been told like your need to be attractive has to go on the fire, right? Like your desire to present a certain way and to look, you know, to look a certain way, like caring about how many lines I have in my face, or, you know, obviously you can see I've shaved my head, like presenting to be pretty, it has to go on the fire. Mm. It's time. Like one thing after another, marriage has to go on the fire. Like the desire, the dream that somebody's going to rescue me, the dream of a soulmate has to go on the fire. The dream of being approved of, you know, learning how to make other people approve of me has to go on the fire. And I often hear God say, and don't reach back in to the fire and take it back out, right? Put it on the fire and walk toward me, and freedom is yours. And I've never felt more free than I am now. But I also know that I'm just getting started. Because there are still some things that I'm holding behind my back that I don't want to put on the fire yet.
Like,
you know,
what?
Gosh, I mean, okay, I'll give you one. My judgments, my judgments and opinions, my fucking opinions, I cherish them so much. They are so precious to me, right? Like, and I'm saying to God, like, I'll give you marriage. I'll give you the patriarchy. I'll give you, you know, I get to keep my fucking opinions, my beautiful, beautiful fucking opinions. And God's like, well, you can keep them as long as you want to keep suffering. You know, like you want to keep suffering, keep them. Like they're yours. You have them as long as you want, but when you're ready to stop suffering, put them on the fire with everything else and see what happens to your life without them. And so that's the thing I feel like is the next piece for me is, you know, I watch my nervous system just go up and down and activated and clenched as I witness things in the world and I create opinions about those things. I watch myself suffer. I watch my adrenaline rise. I watch my cortisol. I watch myself see myself as a hero who has to save and change and rescue everything. And God's like, when you're done with that, like when you're done, when you've had your fun on that ride and you want peace, why don't you put those opinions on the fire? And the one thing that usually helps me give it up and surrender is I hear God say to me, you don't even know what you're looking at. Like you don't even know, sweetheart, you don't even know what you're looking at. What you call reality is nothing but a projection of yourself into the world, right? Like, so you don't even, and you don't even know if that's true. So just stop, you know? And do you want to be free or do you want to be, or do you want to be right?
Yeah,
and,
so
you know, 9 out of 10 times, I want to be right.
Yeah, you're human. I think this is just how we are wired.
Yeah.
So important to us.
But, you know, I actually would rather, lately, I think I'd rather be free.
Yeah. Two questions about that. So the first question is, why would you say, are we so attached as women? I think it's more women than men, I would say, to be good. I think it's so, and I can really feel that. It scares the hell out of me that someone could think about me that I'm a bad person. This is
it's my deepest fear.
Why is that? I mean, this is so, and it's like you said, I can go like on the meta level and I can see me like feeling the fear of someone thinking I could be a bad person and I still cannot detach from the fear. So, I mean, is this like the thousands of years of us women being taught to like,
that we always got burned like on the fire, like us when we weren't good? Or what is it? Like, it's so strange, isn't it? Our attachment to be good.
Doesn't it feel like you'll die if you're not good? Doesn't it feel like that in your body?
Yes.
It feels like that to me.
Yeah,
that's why it's my deepest fear. It's I really have realized that I only have three fears. If you really distill them down to the very bottom, I only have three fears. And they come up again and again and again in different forms. They take different costumes, but it's always the same three. If I'm feeling fear, I can be like, which one is this? Mm. You know, the first one is that I'll be abandoned. Mm. I don't have that one very much anymore. Partially it's because I've been single and celibate for the last 5 years. And
wow.
And the depth of peace and that's just, it doesn't come up that much anymore. You know, I also really understand that I really can't be abandoned. I can only abandon myself. Mm. No, people can come and go, but I haven't been abandoning myself for a long time. So that fear is not as active, but it's still there. It's still there. The second one is that I'm going to be trapped with somebody or multiple people who are crazy and dangerous, that I'm going to be trapped with people who are dangerous and crazy. That's a big one for me. And that goes back to childhood. Like, wow, I'm like trapped in this room with somebody who's like crazy and volatile. And I have to figure out how to calm them down, how to make them not hurt me. I need to figure out how to manage them, right? So like whenever I'm in a situation where somebody is acting what I would call crazy, or dangerous or competitive or jealous, I'm like, you know, I get activated because I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to be trapped with this person. And that's one that I have to work on by reminding myself that I'm an adult, I have a driver's license. I have a bank account. I have a car. I'm never trapped. You know, I can leave any situation at any moment. I can hang up on any phone call at any moment. I can get up from any table at any moment and walk out. I can leave the country at any moment. Like if my country is feeling crazy and my country is feeling crazy, I can leave. You know, I can go, you know, I can go to a different room. I can go to a different part of the world. I can go, I have agency. Right. And that's something that many of my ancestors did not have. Mm-hmm. And the third fear is that I am essentially bad, that I am essentially bad and wrong, and that I am not a good person. And that fear is the strongest one. I fear that more than I fear death. I fear that I'm not good, or that somebody will think that I'm not good, or that I've done something wrong. I honestly fear it more than death. And so I think to answer your question, why is it there? Why is it so deep? I think because I don't know, probably true with my ancestors and thousands of generations of women, I believed as a child that if I was not good, in the description of good that my parents had, especially my mother, that I would be thrown away, that I would be eliminated. I don't think I could have put words on it as a child, but I think I believed that I would be killed, that I would die, that's how important it was, that if I disappointed her in any way, or did anything that reflected poorly on the family, that I would be cast out and killed. And I think about how in a lot of cultures they have that thing called honor killings, where your brothers and your uncles will literally kill you as a girl if you do anything that brings dishonor to the family. This idea of like honoring the law of the family is more important than anything in the entire world is so strong. And I'm still getting away from that. I'm still taking myself out of that system. And it isn't easy. It's really, really powerful. It's really, really strong. But the message that I now get from my God is that doing what you needed to do to keep the family happy and pleased with you was not actually safe for you when you were a child, and it's not safe for you now. It was not safe then, and it isn't safe now. That's not where your safety is going to come, because it's actually an impossible task. I can't keep them happy. They're not happy. So I can't make them happy, because they intrinsically, first of all, they aren't already. So there's nothing that I can do to make them happy. And the things that I tried to do, especially in my 20s and 30s, to be good and to make them happy, almost killed me. Like, those were the things that actually killed me. The things that I thought I had to do to not be killed were the things that actually came the very closest to killing me. So yeah, there's a radical awakening happening right now. And I'm feeling tingles on my head. So I know that this is like, I'm tapping into something. None of the old rules are going to work anymore. Nothing that we thought was going to keep us safe is going to keep us safe. Culture's not going to keep us safe. Institutions are not going to keep us safe. Men are not going to keep us safe. Government, democracy is not going to keep us safe. Laws are not going to keep us safe. There's nothing except ourselves.
Thank you. I think what you just said is so important in regards of that as children, we try to cope with the dysfunctional system by engaging in a dysfunctional way. Like, you can only live in a dysfunctional system if you become dysfunctional yourself. Because if you would be functional, you get kicked out of a dysfunctional system, right? So I find this really interesting whenever people, for example, in families where someone is drinking or sexually abusing another person, and everyone knows in a family and no one speaks up, everyone is holding up the dysfunctional system, and one person speaks up and says, this person is drinking or is an alcoholic or this person is violent, then this person gets out to be called a crazy person who is saying the truth, because everything else is so dysfunctional that it cannot hold something that is actually speaking the truth. So I think it's so true what you say, that what you did as a child, and I can so relate, I can so much relate to your experience, is, of course, it's not keeping you safe, because it's actually just the opposite of the dysfunctional in the dysfunctional kind of. So yeah, I can so much relate to it. And I feel that also for me in the last 2 years, allowing myself to sit in the what is or what could be perceived as bad, as a bad behavior, like setting boundaries, saying, no, this is not working for me. And this was like, and this, so the word fire resonates so deeply with me, because I feel the last 3 years was walking for me through fire. I was just walking through fire and burning everything away. And it was so scary. It was so scary. But the interesting thing is that the fire just burns away what anyways is not for you. And then you get out of the fire and you feel so good. I mean, you feel naked. You feel so naked, but you feel so good. You feel so like fresh, like out of a sauna, a really hot sauna. when you were talking about putting things into the fire, because I just hear the people listening right now, and I feel like people are, oh, I have something to throw into the fire. And it sounds really good, but how do we actually do it? Like, do you have, is it a conscious process of becoming aware of something that is standing between you and your freedom, and you consciously like give it into this fire of transformation? Or how is your process of your path to freedom, let's call it like that?
I think that truth is the fire. And this is what happens to me again and again and again, is that I get in a situation where something's happening in my life. It's always around a relationship, because that's where the fire gets tested, right? Whether it's a friendship, a family member, a romantic relationship, you know, it's always around a relationship where I've gotten myself into a situation where what's happening inside of that relationship is making me sick. Mm. Now, it's not to say that the other person is bad or wrong. It's just that the dynamic that we've fallen into is toxic. And I fully acknowledge that I helped to create it, right? Like, I love the word codependency, because the word co is right there in the title, right? It's like we co-created this poisonous thing that we're in right now. Mm-hmm. And we've gotten ourselves to this point where I'm now having fantasies about killing myself because I'm so unhappy in this, or I want to ghost you because I just need to get away from you. I want to change my name and fake my own death and get the fuck out. Like, what do I have to do to get out? Right. Like, and the feeling is once more the feeling of being trapped. Mm. There's a tarot card, and I never remember which one it is, but it's one of the sword cards. And my friend Martha Beck said to me, "This is your card. This is your destiny on earth. It's this card." And it shows a woman, and she's blindfolded. So she's got, you know, a scarf around her eyes, her hands are tied, and she's surrounded by swords. She's trapped, she's blindfolded, and her hands are tied. And she's wailing. She's like, "Wah!" Like, her face is one of anguish, right? Again and again and again and again in my life, I get to that point where I'm in a situation where it feels like that. And the feeling that I always have at the very end of that situation, right before the fire, right before the awakening, right before the courage, the feeling that I always have is there's no way out. There's no way out. I'm in too deep. I can't get, this is the person I can't get away from. This is my sibling. You can't get away. You're trapped. This is my mother. You're trapped. You can't get away from this. This is my husband. I can't get away from this. This is my best friend. I'm trapped. This is the way things are. I'm trapped. It's like this feeling of like, I'm trapped. I'm trapped. I'm trapped. But then my friend Martha pointed out to me that the woman's blindfold in the picture, it's actually not tied. And her hands are actually not tied. There's a rope around them, but all she has to do is open up her hands and her hands are free. All she has to do is take the blindfold off and she can see. And the swords aren't real. They're hovering. They're floating. They don't touch the ground. She's in a cage that isn't even real. And all she has to do to get free is take off the blindfold, take off the handcuffs, and walk away. That's it, you know? And what the walking away always looks like for me is I have to use my voice and I have to say the truth. That's the fire. And I fucking don't want to. And I never want to. And I go through this multiple times a year. You know, it's not like one or two or three times in your life, although I think there are some really big ones. But like multiple times a year, I'm trapped. I'm trapped. I hate this. I hate this. I hate the way this relationship is going. I hate the way I feel. I hate the dishonesty that I'm living in. I hate saying yes when I mean no. I don't want to do this. But I also don't want to tell the truth because I'm so afraid that you're going to look at me and think that I'm bad, that I'm a bad person, that I'm not good enough, I'm not kind enough, I'm not patient enough, I'm not generous enough. And the thing that I find myself saying now to people is, you know, I've spoken about being in recovery, in addiction recovery. This last addiction to wanting people to think that I'm good is like the final addiction. And I'm in recovery in a 12-step program for codependency. And I tell people that I'm in that. I tell people that, you know, and I just say, listen, I'm in a 12-step recovery program for a lifetime of codependency. I cannot do this thing that we keep doing and call myself emotionally sober. I can't. It's not in accordance with my sobriety. Like, I can't. There's like certain ways that I have to live in order to stay sober. And doing this isn't sober for me. And one of the things that I have to say to people is, I'll give you an example. A family member said to me recently, and this was like, this is the fire. A family member said to me recently, I need to know that you're going to be here for me. You know, I need to know when you step away like you did in the last 2 years, it really hurt me. And I need to know going forward, I need a promise from you. I need you to tell me that you're always going to be here for me and that I can count on you. And we were sitting in a restaurant and I said, okay, I need a moment because I'm having a physical reaction to this. My hands are starting to shake. I'm starting to feel like I'm going to cry. I'm starting to feel tense. So I said, I never make good decisions when I'm activated like this. So I'm really activated. You're not doing anything wrong. You're asking for what you want, but I'm having a reaction. So can you give me a moment to find my center again so that I can answer your question from the highest place within me and not from a place of fear? And it's funny, my eye right now is starting to, I'm having a physical reaction even to the memory, right? Somebody in my family is saying to me, I need to know that you will always be here for me. This is level 10. Like, this is how I prove I'm a good person to you. I prove I'm a good person to you by saying, I will always be here for you. But I also know that that person is mentally ill. I also know that that person is, and I know that what that means. I know what it means for that person, for me to always be there for them. It means I have to pick up the phone every time they're having a mental breakdown and take care of them. That's what they're asking me to do. And I am not there for that for anybody. It doesn't matter how much I love them. I'm not there for that for anybody because I'm not qualified for that. I'm not a mental health professional. Like, I am not the person you should be calling. I can't help you. And all I'm going to do as a codependent is take all of your feelings into my body, become obsessed with trying to save you, and abandon myself. And so I got really quiet and I said to her, I actually need to pray before I answer your question because I need to hear God's answer. And this isn't a person who believes in God, so they're probably like, she's crazy. I don't care. I sat there in the middle of the restaurant and I prayed. And I just said, God, please tell me what to say. And I said, I will never make a promise to you that I can't keep. That's out of my integrity. I can't make a promise to you right now to give you the answer you want in order to make you happy, knowing that I can't keep that promise. So the only thing I can promise you is that I will always prioritize my own mental health and well-being above anything and anybody else in this world. So that's my priority, because if I don't take care of me, nobody will take care of me. So that's where it starts. I come first. I come first. And then if I have anything left and I feel like I can actually be of service to you, I will share with you what I have. But But no, I cannot say to you, I cannot look you in the eye and say, I will always be there for you. I can't give you that. And that's the fire.
That's what happened to your nervous system after you said that? What was your body feeling afterwards?
Terror. Absolute terror. Every cell in my body was like, you can't say that. You can't do that. You're terrible. This is somebody you're related to. You need to be, you know, terror. And I watched the terror and afterwards, and it was interesting because she said, oh, right, because you were always the person that everybody in the family goes to feel better. And I was like, yeah. Another way to say it is I've been the orderly in my family's mental hospital my entire life. That is not a job that I'm going to take on anymore. I'm not taking on that job anymore. I'm not qualified for that job. It doesn't help them and it doesn't help me.
No.
And then after that conversation, I was shaking. I was frightened. I was alarmed. And my inner children were like, we're in so much trouble. We are in so much trouble. Like, you're going to get in so much trouble. You can't do that. And I said to those children, what can I give you right now that would make you feel better? Because I can see that you're really upset by what just happened, but that's a line that I'm holding. So what can we do right now that would be good? And they said, we want to go to McDonald's. We want a strawberry milkshake and a Big Mac and French fries. And I was like, done and done, kids. Let's go to McDonald's, right? You just watched your mom do something really scary. You just watched your mom, me, do something that no woman in our family has ever done, which is to say, I am the first priority of my life and I will not make any promises to you that jeopardize my well-being. And if I lose that relationship as a result of saying that, this is what I said to the kids, my kids inside. I said, if we lose that relationship because we told the truth and we hear silence for the rest of our lives from that person, then we will use that silence as a meditation space because we love silence. What's our favorite thing? Our favorite thing is silence. It's our favorite thing. We love being in meditation, silent and alone and undisturbed. So why are we so afraid that somebody's going to go silent on us? If they go silent on us, they're giving us the gift of silence. Mm. And we'll take that silence and we'll just live in that silence and that peace. And if they come back, then they come back. And if we need to, lots of times now, I've also realized sometimes you need to set a boundary multiple times, right? I'm still, this person has chosen to stay in my life. They're still sending me funny memes. I'm sending them funny memes. I'm telling them I love them. They're telling me they love me. We're good. But it might come up again that they want to reach out for the old Liz and the old rules, right? They're going to have a moment of breakdown and they're going to reach for me. And I may have to say it again. Like, I'm not available for this. I love you and I'm not available for this because it's going to make me sick. I can't help you. But I know and trust. There's also this thing of like, I trust that you can find your way. I trust that you can find your way. I trust that you can find a higher power of your own understanding. I trust your own journey and that I don't have your answers. And I love you. And if you want to walk together side by side, we can walk together side by side, but I'm not carrying anybody anymore. Doesn't help either one of us.
And I think every woman right now listening can relate in a way. And I think, like, while you were talking, I had this feeling that sometimes the greatest gift we can give to someone is disrupting the pattern, even though in the moment it feels very uncomfortable for both sides. But sometimes disruption, I think, is the best medicine we can give each other on a soul level. Like just saying, nope, I'm out of here. Not playing by those rules anymore. Let's play a new game and see if we like it better. And I think this is something so powerful and just beautiful. What happens then for everyone also around you, inside of you, even though it feels really scary in the beginning, but that it allows another, let's call it like level of relationship to occur out of the dysfunctional codependency that was there before. I would like to talk with you about God. Because I have the feeling that we have a very alike understanding of God, or if that is even possible. But take me, if you want to, take me into your relationship with God. Who is she? how is the relationship? How do you pray? Because I feel like you have a very deep, beautiful, calm, loving relationship with God. And I think this is something that helped me in my life so much to just be like, my BFF is God. And maybe we can talk about this a little bit. Like, who is God for you? How do you relate to God? And how do you talk? How are those conversations going?
Oh, they're going great. Actually, the reason I'm grabbing something is because I have the manuscript of my new book. I just finished it 2 weeks ago. You know.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's amazing.
It's a memoir about Rhea, about my partner Rhea, who died of cancer 6.5 years ago, but who before she died of cancer relapsed into active drug addiction after many years sober. And like it became a nightmare. And then through that nightmare, talk about fire, I also came to realize my own addiction, my own codependency, my own sex and love addiction, my own deep obsession with trying to find safety through another person, using other people as drugs, smoking people like crack, eating people like Xanax, trying to just find trying to regulate myself through others. But anyway, there's some poems in this book, and I wanted to read you this poem because it's the simplest answer, and then we can talk more about it.
I love this. Thank you.
Yeah, this is called this one's called The God of My Understanding. And I think that's really key. It's a term that they use a lot in 12-step and addiction recovery, is the God of your own understanding. You are allowed to have the God of your own understanding. Any God that was forced upon you is not a God who is for you. And also, you'll never surrender to a God who is forced upon you. You'll only fear a God who is forced upon you, right? So I remember when I first came into the rooms of recovery, my sponsor gave me the assignment to write a job description of the God that I needed. Write what you're looking for in a God. And I was like, you can't do that. There's only one. And she's like, of course you can do that. Like, of course you can do that. You can say exactly what you need your God to be in order for you to surrender to that God. You get to say, who is the God I could surrender to? What would the values of that God be? What would the promises of that God be? And my God, the first thing was like, unconditional love. I have to be unconditionally loved. I have to know that this is a safe place where I can go, where there's absolutely nothing that I could ever do to lose that love. That is the primary thing. I also need to have a God with a very good sense of humor. And I also need to have a God who's available 24 hours a day to me and is never too busy to hear me and to speak to me and to love me. And I need to have a God with a sense of adventure. I need to have a God who's like, we're collaborators in creativity, and we're collaborators in adventure. I got to design my God, right? And then I got to have that God, and then I got to love that God, and that God loves me. So this poem is called the God of my understanding, the God of my understanding, not a king, not a judge, not a father, not a mother either, although that comes somewhat closer, not the word, but not against words, not a list of commandments, but an expression of extraordinary tenderness, not a series of laws, but an offering of guidance, not the silence, but the silence beyond the silence, not the breath, but breath adjacent, not a fact, but a knowing, fond, humorous, intimate, fluid, impervious to logic, drawn toward my stillness, contagious in its affection, spacious beyond imagining, unprovable but unmistakable, always pleased to be discovered by me, wanting only for that which will free us all, wanting only to be here. That's enough for now. I've said too much already.
That is beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing. It's beautiful.
Thank you.
I really like that. When you talk to God, to your God, and that resonates so deeply with me, to choose your God, like who do you need? Who do you want to surrender to? How are your conversations? Like, how do you connect? Is it a dialogue? Is it a monologue? Is it like a humorous bar conversation?
yes, and yes. it's whatever is needed. I think my first idea of prayer was what I was taught, which is, and there are some beautiful prayers that I was taught. I love some of those prayers very much. I love the Lord's Prayer. I think it's beautiful. But what I was taught was that prayer was kind of a recitation, you know, where I say these words and then maybe God will hold me in favor. Or prayer was a petition where I was, essentially it was one-sided. It was always about me talking to God, trying to please God, trying to get God's attention, or begging for something. And what was missing in that instruction, that religious instruction that I grew up with, was listening, right? It was all about me talking. It was never about me listening. So my prayers these days are much more about listening than talking. I'm not really very interested anymore in what I want. I don't pray for like my wants because I have a long history of wanting things that are not good for me. So I don't trust my wants. I have no reason to trust my wants and my desires. So it's because, and here's the other thing. Many times in life, I've gotten what I wanted, right? I prayed for what I wanted. I got exactly what I wanted and it almost killed me. So I'm out of that business now. I'm like out of the business of like, God, please give me these things. The only thing I ask for is clarity. Like, please give me clarity. Please let me hear you. You know, like in that moment that I described about being with my family member and them saying to me, like, promise me that you'll always be there for me, and asking God, please show me what to say right now. Like, give me direction, give me clarity. A prayer that I have a lot is I say, please fill my mind with the brilliance of your mind. Like, please fill my mind with the brilliance of your mind. My mind is too small and too frightened. But then the main thing is I do this thing that's called two-way prayer that I was taught by my sponsor when I came into addiction recovery. And And it's very simple. And I'm actually teaching it essentially on this Substack that I have now, this newsletter called Letters from Love. But you get a notebook. I could show you. I have, I have it right here. I have all these props today to show you.
It's amazing.
It's so good. I brought all my toys. So I have these notebooks. I have thousands of them. As a German, you might recognize Lexan brand. Yeah. and I open up a page, and you know, this is today's, and I write one question, and it's always the same question: Dear God, what would you have me know today? And then I listen for the answer, and I write the answer. I write what I hear. And I hear a God who's telling me what I need for the day. And the way that you begin this practice is that you begin by imagining. It's an act of imagination. You don't have to believe in God, and you don't have to know what God is. You just ask the question, what would you have me know today? And if you don't like the word God, you can use the word love. Dear love, what would you have me know today? What do you want me to know today? And then you write to yourself, what would the wisest, calmest, most loving voice in the world want you to know today? So at first, it's like an act of imagination where you're actually writing the letter because you're imagining it. Like, what would, if I did have a God who was unconditionally loving, who approves of me completely, who wants me to be happy and free, what would they want me to know today? What would their guidance be today? And then you write that down. Over time, because I've done this for years, I don't think of it anymore as an act of imagination. I believe that it is actually God speaking to me, but it doesn't really matter. I mean, if it's only my imagination, then it's like the best of my imagination. And I would like to hear what the best of my imagination has to offer rather than my lowest vibration of fear. So that's how it is. And then throughout the day, I just ask for direct, immediate guidance. You know, like, give me an intuitive guidance for the next 5 minutes. You know, or if I'm in a difficult conversation with somebody and it's very activating, I'll call God in and say, like, show me how you want me to be right now. Mm. You know, and usually the answer is, there's no problem right now. Like, everything's fine. They're fine. You're fine. Everybody's fine. Settle down. Everything's okay. You know, because that's usually what's true. What's true is that everything's fine. But I get very specific direction. And then my piece of the contract is that I do exactly what I'm told. Like, if I'm told to do something, I do it. And that, I think, strengthens the connection. Even if it's painful, even if it's difficult, it's like, oh, I don't want to do this, but I'll do it because I believe that you have my best interests at heart. And I believe that what is best for me will also be best for everyone.
It's interesting because it's like 100% how I talk with God. And it's, I didn't grow up in a religion or anything, so I was very much raised without any spiritual or religious thing. It was more like, it's bad. It's more like you just have to believe what's in your mind, kind of. So I was very much on the other spectrum, which, of course, you can imagine felt really strange for me as like this most spiritual little energy being. Like, I was like, what? It doesn't make sense to me. So it was like, for me, quite a journey to allow to reconnect to that voice that I always heard, but I was always thinking like I'm crazy because it's like, it's not something rational. Yeah. And so, yeah, for me as well, it's like this, it's a beautiful conversation, and it's literally a voice I hear. It's more, as you said, it's more about listening. I always ask questions. I once heard, I think it was Oprah actually, and she said that the question she always asks God is, what is the highest dream you can possibly dream of me?
Wow. And she definitely has been listening to that.
Yes, she did. And I think this is such a beautiful question.
Yeah.
Like, what is the highest dream you can possibly have of me? How I can walk through this life, what I can express, what can flow through me. And it's so beautiful because there always comes an answer. Like, I never experienced no answer. And maybe it's, I would like to know how it's for you, because I feel like when God answers, like she or he or whoever is not giving you the why. Like, this is how I know it's God. Like, she's just like, do this, go left, listen to this podcast. I don't know, like, call this person. And I go like, yeah, but why? And there won't come an answer ever
never.
To a why.
You will never, ever, ever get the answer to why.
And this
never.
Is so interesting, right? So God is never, she will never explain to you why you should do
never.
Something. She just
it's
goes
none
like,
of your business.
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
I hear God say all the time to me, it's none of your business.
Your business.
You know, why? Yeah. Just do it. Yeah.
Just yeah, so
I'm so excited by that, because I was going to say, like, you ask questions and you always get answers. And I was going to say, yeah, but the one thing I never get an answer to is why.
And you know what is so interesting? That the fear, like when it's our fear, the fear gives you like a million whys and why nots, right?
Yeah.
Like your fear, your mind will always give you like why you should or shouldn't do. And so this is for me like the best way how I can always know, well, this is definitely not God who is right now in the driver's seat and giving me like a million good arguments. Like, God doesn't argue. God is just like, hey, go.
Do
go
this.
And shut
do
the
that.
Fuck up. This is God.
Actually, I have another poem in my book that says, the shortest conversation I ever had with God is the title. Mm-hmm. Me, but why? God, because is. Because is. Yeah. Why is not a spiritual question, and it will never bring a spiritual answer.
Yeah.
It will only leave you trapped in fear and the need to know, the need to control, which is also fear. But what I've discovered is that you can replace the why questions with who, what, where, when, and how. All of those questions, well, you'll get an answer. Not always when. Oh, except it depends on the phrasing of the question. But like, what? What do you want me to know, God? I will always get an answer to that question. How do you want me to move through this situation?
Mm.
How do you want me to show up in this conversation? How do you want me to respond to this email? Always get a how. Who do you want me to be? Who do you want me to be in this situation? Who do you want me to show up as? Who do you want me to show up for? Who do you want me to serve? Who do you want me to call? Who do you want me to ask for help? Who do you want me to not respond? You know, the who's, that'll work. When time is such a human thing, when is sort of like, if I ask questions like, when is this going to end? You know, when is this going to end? The answer, I'll get an answer, but the answer will be very sassy. You know, it'll be like, it's going to end when it ends, honey. And when it ends, it's not going to be you who ended it. You know, so just keep like, it's don't worry about when. And what are the other ones? Who, what, where, when, how? Yeah, but not why.
No.
Sometimes later you can see the why, right? Don't you feel like later?
Yeah, of course. Of course.
Like a year later, 2 years later, 10 years later, you're like, oh, that's why. Okay. And God's like, I knew it the whole time.
and we probably, if God would have given it to us, we wouldn't believed it. In the moment it would have been presented to us. That's really interesting. So I have one question, because you will be in Berlin in April 18th.
So will you.
We are so excited here. It's so like, oh, we have, I am in South Africa. I'm part of a project. It's called Earth Child Project. And they do meditation and yoga for children in the townships. And they have this thing when they celebrate someone, they always go like, sparkles. So they send like sparkles. And I feel like, sparkles to you to coming to Berlin.
Cute.
It's so cute. Like they're like this 20, 30 children. And then they like, they shower each other with sparkles. Aww. It's so cute. I really like that. Like sparkles. yeah. So we're going to see each other on the 18th of April here in Berlin. And it will be a night about creativity. And as I know you are, or maybe I don't know, like I would guess from how I perceive you, that you are like more on the chaotic spectrum than on the very structured spectrum. Is this true or
no? Actually, not. No, I mean, I have chaotic emotions, but I'm actually really disciplined and structured. Yeah, when it comes to creativity, actually, in all aspects of my life, if anything, a little bit too structured, a little bit too, I could use probably a little more chaos. Yeah, I'm, no, actually, that's not true. God loves my discipline. Okay. I just heard a correction. God was like, no, I want you that way. I want you that way. It's because of my discipline that I've been able to become the writer that I am. And it's because of my discipline that I've been able to find that God voice, right? That seriousness that I brought to, God's like not having it. God's like, mm-mm. Don't say you need less discipline. No, more. It's good. It's what I want. Discipline is freedom for me. And I'm really, really organized as a writer. The way that I work is, I know very few people who are more disciplined than me when it comes to creativity and the way that I work. It's very structured. It's very organized. It's I'm a soldier. Like I'm a real soldier. I always say I'm a soldier and I'm a monk. But I find great freedom in that. It's not suffering. I love it.
So is it discipline or is it devotion?
Oh, I love the words. Yeah, devotion. But all the devotional, like when I studied at the ashram in India, my guru wrote a book called The Discipline of Yoga. Like devotion comes with discipline, I think.
Okay.
You know, you humble yourself before. You make yourself be of service to the thing that you're creating, right? Which means that I have to humble my ego. I have to make myself sit there, even when other parts of me don't want to be sitting there. It's like, no, we're going to sit here. We're going to sit here for the next 3 hours and nobody's moving and we're doing this. We're going to sit in this meditative state. We're going to sit... there's a word they use in Vipassana yoga, in Vipassana meditation that says, sit strong determination. Is that it?
Yeah. Strong determination. Yeah.
Strong determination. I write that.
I remember that. I did Vipassana 10 years ago in South Africa. It was so intense.
Yeah, yeah, man, like you got to sit strong determination. It's intense. It's like, we're not moving. And I don't, you know, for me, that's my path, I think. And I always want to make it really clear, like it's not everybody's path, but my path has been one of great discipline. And that's the gift that I am so grateful to my mother for having given me. I think our parents, they can only give you what they have. Like I can't give anybody something that I don't have, right? Like they can only give you what they have. So that's why I don't feel, I've processed a lot and I don't feel a lot of resentment. It's rare anymore that I feel resentment toward my parents. It's like, oh yeah, you can't be angry at somebody for not giving you something that they don't have. It's like asking somebody for money who has no money. And they're like, I have no money. And you're like, you should have money and give it to me. You know, there were certain things that my parents didn't have. They didn't have inner peace. They didn't have serenity. They didn't have a God consciousness. They didn't have the capacity for unconditional love. They didn't know how to forgive. They didn't have those things. But there were some things they had, and it's not an accident who your parents are. I don't think that it's an accident. I got exactly the perfect parents that I needed for the journey that I was on. My mother gave me everything she had, and one of the things she had was discipline. And I didn't have that. I was not born that way. If I had had a parent who was more loose, I would have just been a very loose kid, you know, but like she was tight. She ran a tight program in that house. And it was like, these are your jobs. These are your responsibilities. These are your chores. This has to be finished. So it made me extremely anxious, but it also made me, I learned how to start and finish something, even if I didn't want to do it. And so I took that discipline and I applied it to the thing I love the most, which is my creativity, the two things I love the most, my creativity and my spiritual path. And I'm so grateful to my mother for that gift, because it's not fun. Writing this book, it's not fucking fun. You know, it's like parts of it are fun, but like, especially this book that's about addiction and shame and death of the person you love, like cancer, this is not fun. But every single day when I would, you know, open up my notebook and ask God, like, what would you have me do today? God was like, sit and write for 2 hours. I know you're not enjoying it, and that's okay. I see that you are in discomfort, and that's okay. I see that you have lost faith in this project and you don't want to do it, and there's a million things you would rather do. That's okay. You can be uncomfortable. Sit. It's what I want you to do. I know you want me to tell you that you don't have to do it, but you do have to do it. So sit, strong determination, and continue, because I want this thing finished through you. And that's how it gets done. And it's like that with every book. Some are easier than others, but there are multiple stages in each book where I reach a place where I'm like, I don't believe in this. I don't like this. I don't believe in myself. I'm bored. I'm tired. I'm lonely. I want to go outside. Why is this my job? Can't this be somebody else's job? And God's like, no, sweetheart, this is your job. This is your job. Get back to work. And then you can have McDonald's.
I know this feeling of McDonald's as well. We were like, it was like the main enemy to my father when we were children was McDonald's. So whenever we were driving to the grocery stores, we would pass by a McDonald's. And I remember sitting in the car smelling the smell of McDonald's as a kid and never being allowed to go in there. And I remember like the first time going there, and I really then, when I earned my own money, I don't know when I was studying, how often I ate at freaking McDonald's, because it was just like, for me, this was like getting my childhood back.
I feel
your inner children.
Look, we know that it's terrible. You know what I mean? Like, we know that it's like, that it's terrible for animals and the planet. But every once in a while, you know, every once in a while, my inner children need me to show them, as their loving mother, that I will do something that is even outside of my integrity to show them how much I love them.
I love them.
Right? You know, it's like, you're just a 7-year-old kid. I'm not going to give a 7-year-old kid a lecture about how terrible McDonald's is. I'm going to take that kid to McDonald's and get them a hamburger, make them happy. You know, it's like, I want them to know that I love them so much that of course we'll go, you know, like not every day. Not even every year, but like, there's going to be moments when my children need something from me that's good for them, even if it's bad for them.
Do you have the title already for the new book?
I do, but I can't share it with you yet.
Ah! But do you know when it will be published? Like, do you know
probably
already?
In about a year. My agent hasn't even seen it yet, you know?
Exciting.
I mean, it's really like I'm finishing the final edit and I'm giving it to my agent in a few weeks. So it's like, it's really, really, really new. So usually I would say probably in about a year. It depends. I mean, I don't know. It depends on how my editors perceive it. Like if they look at it and they're, you know, and they live out my fantasy by saying it's perfect, don't change anything, then it'll be sooner. But if reality is in play, then I will probably have to do quite a bit more work on it before they're ready to publish it. But maybe not. We'll see. This might be the one. This might be the one that they say it's perfect, don't change anything.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's very personal. So, I mean, it's your story and Raya's story. Yeah. So what could be changed, you know, at the end?
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to read it very, very much. Very
Thank
much.
You, sweetheart. Thank you. So there I'll get you one... an early copy.
Yes, 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 please, please. There's one last question. You answered it the last time, but I'm excited to hear your answer today because you changed a lot since we talked the last time. You had quite a journey. So imagine one day there will be the last day of your life. So you will be still for very long on this beautiful planet and you will grow and you will maybe even deepen your own spiritual practice and everything. And then there will be the last day of your life. And how life plays sometimes, I would be there. I will be Liz. How are you? And I would give you a big hug. And then I would tell you, I would tell you that everything you ever wrote, recorded, or did is deleted. So your book's gone. Everything is just, it's deleted, gone. Mm-hmm. But I would have a white sheet of paper and a pen. And I would tell you, Liz, so this is the only last white sheet of paper you will ever write something on. And you can write down three things. What would you write down?
I don't remember what I said last time. So I would love to hear later what I actually said last time. I would write, God is real. You are loved. And I would quote the Bhagavad Gita. It is better to live your own life imperfectly than to live a perfect imitation of somebody else's life.
Beautiful. Thank you. Oh, Liz, thank you so much. Thank you so much, really. I love you so deeply.
My pleasure. I love you too, sweetheart.
I'm so excited to give you a real hug.
I know, in real life. April.
And and to see you there. And thank you so much for the conversation, really, and for sharing everything and for helping everyone listening to see the truth in themselves and to knowing that the truth always feels really uncomfortable in the first moment, but on the long run, it's just the best way to live.
It will, in fact, set you free.
Yeah. It does.
Yeah. Thank you. I can't wait to hug you and to see a lot of you in Berlin, I hope. And until that moment, just keep doing what you're doing because you're doing it beautifully.
Thank you.
Bye, sweetheart.
Thank you so much, Liz. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Take care. See you in April.
Bye.
See you soon. Bye-bye.
Willkommen zurück aus diesem wunderschönen Gespräch. Ich hoffe, du konntest dich aufladen und ja, konntest irgendwie ganz viel für dich mitnehmen. Und auch vielleicht neue Perspektiven. Vielleicht hat auch was so ein bisschen, ja, dich innerlich so aufgewühlt oder so. Das ist ja manchmal auch gar nicht schlecht, wenn Themen uns so ein bisschen rausholen, uns aus unseren eigenen Mustern. Ich jedenfalls mag das immer gern, auch wenn es sich manchmal so schwierig dann anfühlt, aber ich weiß, es ist immer gut, aus diesen eigenen, aus der eigenen Perspektive immer mal wieder liebevoll so ein bisschen rausgestupst zu werden. Und ich hoffe, das konnten wir mit diesem Gespräch für dich tun. 18. April ist Liz live in Berlin. Wenn du möchtest, komm gerne dazu. Ich packe dir den Link zu den Tickets in die Shownotes.
Ich habe damit nichts zu tun. Ich freue mich einfach nur, Liz zu supporten und werde auch vor Ort sein, wo ich mich schon mega drauf freue. Und ansonsten schau wie immer so gerne bei Instagram vorbei, @LauraMarlinaSeiler. Lass mir deine Gedanken da zu der Folge, was du für dich mitgenommen hast. Ich schicke dir eine riesengroße Umarmung. Es ist so schön, dass es dich gibt. Und wenn du gerne mit mir in Kontakt sein möchtest, dann komm einfach in meinen Newsletter. Da kriegst du immer mittwochs Post von mir zu jedem neuen Podcast und erfährst auch immer so ein bisschen, was gerade so los ist. Und ja, Freunde der Sonne, macht's einfach gut. Fühl dich umarmt. Es ist so schön, dass es dich gibt. Rock on und Namaste. Deine Laura.